Chapter 23.
What is this useless refuse?
Sour spat. The wiry slaver second in command, angrily shoving over the scanning equipment, piled on Charlie's retrieved salvage sled.
So many pieces, and the material is inelegant. Crude, even.
The off-worlders claim it is powerful in its own regard, Captain Tour said as he walked through the organized mounds, casually kicking over the painstakingly salvaged instruments and makeshift survival gear. From the nearby ship, Charlie was pained to see his and Rika's carefully gathered water containers go flying, their precious contents gurgling out into the sand.
I have seen no such sign of potency, however. These beings are no better than hoarders of junk, the green man grumbled.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Sour. I had hoped for perhaps some worth to be found in their flesh, but even in that regard, only two of their number have any resale value to us. These others will cost more to heal than they'd fetch at market. A dozen of the slave trader's crew were digging through the ship's remains, searching for anything they might be able to sell or trade. A pile of possibilities was amassing in the survivors' camp area, though the green men had no idea what any of their booty was actually used for.
What are they doing? Charlie asked, watching them through a cell's small window from the nearby slave trader ship.
They're just dumping random things in a pile.
Standard way of thing being done, it is, Tuk-Tuk said. It's all money they seek. Trade or sale, it no matter so long as value.
But they're leaving the useful equipment inside. They've only taken out a bunch of broken junk. Charlie realized what was happening. They really don't understand technology, do they?
Technology? It's not a word I know.
Even with the translation software?
What is software?
The program that makes whatever they're using to let us understand one another function.
Ah, is spell then?
No, technology.
Makes thing happen without me doing? Sound like spell to Tuk-Tuk.
Charlie sighed. There seemed to be no point in arguing semantics with the blue humanoid. You said they seek profit, he mused, watching the slaver work team hauling devices they didn't understand out of the ship and placing them in piles based on appearance alone. It seemed they valued aesthetics over function, placing sleek but benign machines together, while bulkier and far more powerful ones were arranged in a separate group. Tell me, Tuk-Tuk. It looks like they're sorting our machinery for...
What is machinery?
Those things, Charlie said, pointing. Tuk-Tuk's eye stalks swiveled as he looked over the strange containers and boxes with shiny colored bits and filaments jutting out where they were smashed open. Wires and lights seen by eyes unfamiliar with them. You said they're all about making a profit, right? So will they load our gear onto the ship to sell elsewhere?
If value...
Excellent. And if they don't really know what our gear does, maybe they'll bring along something I can actually use. The plasma cutter isn't self-powered, and it needs its tanks, but it should be easy to jury-rig with a battery cell from a number of other devices. And with that, we could cut our way out of this place. Unfortunately for Charlie, the cutter was a fairly bulky piece of equipment, and odds were the unfamiliar aliens wouldn't have the first idea how to dismantle it to bring along. Judging by the gear they'd amassed so far, he thought that assessment was a likely one. For the better part of the day, the T'Slaver stacked up piles of broken equipment. Captain Tour sorted through the potential salvage with disgust. Almost none of it seemed to have much value to his untrained eyes. Strange magic that he could not figure out how to use. Charlie wondered if he should try to convince them to let him help select items of value in hopes of secreting aboard something that might help him free Rika and the others. But no one came to see him all day, save the lone collar-wearing slave who brought them a cup of water and plate of surprisingly flavorful porridge of some sort. She was, Charlie noted, a stocky being with thick hair and a curvy, rather human shape. That, however, was where the similarities ended. Her orange-hued skin was definitely otherworldly.
I'm Charlie, and this is Tuk-Tuk. What's your name? He asked, as the woman stopped short of the invisible door barrier
and slid a pair of hovering trays into their cell.
Now that's a neat trick, he noted.
The orange girl looked as if she was about to speak, but the runes on the slender band around her neck began to glow. She quickly turned and walked away.
She no talk now, used to talk much, share news, slavers no like, so now she have make quiet spell on her. Talking cause much pain.
Charlie found the idea quite offensive.
Bastards, he muttered.
But at least they feed us pretty well.
You think this good?
Tuk-Tuk asked as he ate his portion, seemingly offended.
Not bad for prison food.
Tuk-Tuk snorted a laugh.
He's amateur. I far greater cook. But they no let Tuk-Tuk in kitchen. Say I fill others' heads with nonsense.
You? Charlie said with a little laugh.
No offense, but you're not the most subversive of speakers.
It's just bad translation spell.
Oh?
Yes, back on my world, I great speaker. I poet.
A poet, he said, eyeing the blue man.
You? Really?
Yes, really. Among my people, many say I quite articulate.
I'll take your word for it, he replied, taking a sip from his cup.
Yeah, this is not tasty.
T'slaver no use good spells for slave water. Us get cheap stuff.
I wish they'd let us have the water we found. It was delicious, I tell you. But those assholes kicked the containers over.
Such a waste.
The alien looked at him curiously, a strange look on his face.
You say you find water here?
Yeah, a tiny puddle in the desert, Charlie said, a bit unsettled by the alien's sudden interest. But we drained it all, so there's none left. He didn't know why he felt the need to hide the continued existence of their discovery, but given all that had happened in the past 12 hours, Charlie thought it wise to play his cards close to the vest.
It's impossible, Tuk-Tuk said. No water in Balamar wasteland, not for hundreds of years.
Well, we found some, but it wasn't much.
You no understand, Charlie. Much bad magic here. Great Vizsla killed in war times. When Vizsla Balamar die, his whole realm made desert.
That would explain the stone structures, he realized. So they actually were buildings, but some war wiped them out hundreds of years ago.
That must have been some fluke then. Just condensation in the rocks or something, Charlie said, keeping the glowing cistern secret for the time being. Shouting erupted outside.
That's Omid. He dropped his food and rushed to the window. He couldn't see what was happening, but from his vantage point, he was afforded a clear view of his injured crewmates being roughly dragged together next to the piles of gear.
What the hell are they doing?
Tuk-Tuk leaned in and looked out the window.
Sorting, determining value.
They intend to sell us then?
Of course, but them injured.
So they'll heal. I treated them, splintered their brakes.
No understand this word.
Splinting?
Helping a bone heal.
Then why they not healed?
Well, it takes time for bones to set and regrow.
No, does not. Spell bind break immediate like, but very pricey.
A sinking feeling hit Charlie's stomach, along with a horrible realization.
They're weighing the value of their lives versus the cost to heal them?
Tuk-Tuk didn't bother answering the obvious. Captain Tour reached into one of the pouches on his belt and slid the slop over his fingers.
No!
Charlie shouted against the muffling field covering the window.
They're getting better! I can help treat them! Don't...
Hukta!
The guttural word and accompanying blast of deadly energy from the alien's hand cut him off. Captain Tour repeated the process 3 more times, until Winnie, Omid, Sven, and Siobhan lay dead on the red soil. The elf-looking alien then directed his men which salvage to bring to the ship and walked away, leaving the bodies to the elements.